There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I want to let you know the Listener League is feeling quick. Got about 2 or 3 spots left. If you're interested, leave a rating and review on the listening platform that you're on, preferably iTunes, but any of them works. Send me proof of it, and I'll get you in the league. And if this one fills up and we want to start another, I'll put another league together. I'm playing in the league. I can maybe get a few other guys to join in and make it a little more entertaining for everybody. But tons of fun, roto-style league. And once we get it filled, we might vote for some stats and whatnot. So come check it out. It's going to be an absolute blast. And that's about it. I'm going to keep it simple for you. This is a special edition of Bubba the Batflip, episode 23. Bench with Bubba, episode 244. It is the Barf Draft Recap. Myself, Toby, and we're joined by Sammy Reed. So enjoy the show. Another episode of Bubba and the Batflip, episode 23, a special edition. I'm going to recap the Barf Draft that took place on Saturday in San Francisco, California. Myself and Toby participated in it, and our special guest, who we'll get to in a second, was in it as well. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, Toby on Twitter at BatflipCrazy. What's up, Toby?
Nothing much, Bubba. The audience doesn't know it yet, but we're in a little bit of a spat. We had some shenanigans take place. You know, in the middle rounds of the Barf Draft, which I think we'll get to later on, but I'm over it. I promise.
Sounds like it. It really does. Yeah, it sounds like it
for sure.
We will definitely get to that because I know the guest that I'm going to introduce now. You can find him on Twitter at Sammy Reed FI was laughing his ass off when this took place in the draft, one of many times. But Sammy, how we doing, man?
I'm doing awesome, man. I love your guys' podcast. I rail it constantly. And it's one of my favorites, and so to be on it as an honored guest is a you know, huge honor. So allow me to introduce myself. Here I am.
Thank you. You're technically the first guest on Bubba and the Batflip, so it's gonna be kind of fun.
Oh wow, this is big time for me. I finally arrived.
Yeah. You know, you finally made it. I'm glad we could help you finally make it, Sammy. It's so great. Maybe you could. Yeah, I'm just not gonna say anymore. Before we get into the Barf Draft, though, let's talk about the trade that took place in the middle of the Barf Draft, and we can swing it through the draft there if you want. But Emilio Pagan from Tampa Bay goes to San Diego for Manny Margot. I know, Toby, you're tweeting it out. What's your take on the Rays bullpen now?
Yeah, it was quite the dynamic in the Barf Draft room when the trade went down. Eno Saris, who I'm sure everybody listening knows, had taken Pagan earlier in the draft, and so found out kind of around round 24 or something like that that his first closer was no longer going to be a closer. So that was a little bit of a bummer, just from a fantasy standpoint. I think. For Pagan leaving, obviously he loses a ton of value for folks who have drafted him previously as a closer. I think the situation with the Rays is a little murky. I think a lot of people are kind of anointing Nick Anderson as the closer a little prematurely. That Rays bullpen is super deep. They've got five or six options in that bullpen who can close at any point in time. And knowing how they like to keep costs down, I don't think that they're going to give those saves to any particular person. And I think they certainly won't give them just to one person. At least that would be my sense. I do think it's interesting with Margot, whether it's going to be kind of like musical chairs, whether he's going to stay there and be the weak side of a platoon, or if this means that Kevin Kiermaier and his contract might get moved out of town. That'll be really interesting to see if there's any secondary trades happening off of this trade. But it's true, definitely interesting. I just think, you know, that's one less guy who appeared to maybe be the closer who is no longer one.
Yeah, Sammy, how would you attack this Rays bullpen now? Because like Toby said, there's a lot of options there.
Yeah, so I don't know. I kind of think that the resting brain take is like, okay, Nick Anderson's going to be the closer. This is awesome. And then, you know, kind of the flashing brain take is what Toby said, which is, hey, like the Rays are going to mix and match, and Nick Anderson has 1 year of service time. Certainly they're not incentivized to make him a full-time closer, even though he's probably got close to the best skills, if not the best skills in that bullpen. I think the Galaxy brain take is that this saved a lot of people who haven't drafted yet, who are going to take Pagan as a surefire closer. And I don't think he was. I think that the Rays were going to do a lot of mixing and matching anyway. And so the idea that he was going to be like this for sure closer who's going to save, you know, 25 to 35 games probably wasn't in the cards in the first place. And it's going to save people. So I agree with Toby's take. I think that they will do a lot of mix and matching. I don't think any of us are smart enough to know who's going to lead that bullpen in saves, but I think it's an underdog that anybody saves 20, any individual player. And yeah, I think this trade saved some people from themselves thinking that the Rays were going to do this in the first place.
What's really fun about this trade is if you're, you know, still ready to draft, will help a ton, but additions you can make late in your draft if you're just looking for a few saves here and there, because I'm with you. I think it's going to be I wouldn't say committee is the right word, but it's what the Rays do. They mix and match. Last year, I think they had six or seven guys get multiple saves last year, and I think a lot of those had like seven, eight, or more saves each. So they all had their chance, and, you know, Jose Alvarado had his chance, and Diego Castillo, and Pagan, and Posh, and all these guys got their moments in the sun there. You look at roster resource, they actually have Anderson, Castillo, and Alvarado all listed as closers because they're just as lost as everybody else. It's that kind of mess. Anderson's going to be expensive. His value is going to go up in ADPs. Not one that I want to pay for. I know at the draft, Eno immediately took Diego Castillo,
and that's kind of Eno was on tilt, bro. Oh, Eno was tilted, and it was amazing. If you've never seen Eno like in a little bit of a freak out, it was a special moment.
He tilted a few times. It was pretty funny. He was lucky though. His pick was coming up, so he's able to get Castillo right away.
Right,
but it seemed like that's the popular take on Twitter. I was noticing last night. I kept saying, why not Jose Alvarado? Because he's, you know, he was the guy last year, had some control issues. He could bounce back. I think what I'm trying to get at in all these words is, you know, especially in daily leagues or something, go ahead and take some of these like Castillo's, Alvarado's late if you just want to rack up maybe 10 to 15 saves. But don't count on any of these guys to be the go-to guy. Because one thing that the guys that like Ray Murphy and them at Baseball HQ say, you can roughly equate like 65% of teams' wins into saves. So if the Rays win 85, 90 games like they did last year, that's still, you know, a good chunk of like 50 saves or so, give or take. Split that up between three or four guys, you're still going to get a handful of saves. So something to keep in mind when you break it down. Now, Sammy, as the Padres guy in the crowd, Manny Margot heads there. Toby made a great point. Like Colette's been saying forever, Austin Meadows pretty much the only safe guy on that team for playing time. But Kiermaier was Mr. Defense. Now, that's risky. Margot was once a heralded prospect, couldn't figure it out. What's your thoughts on Margot there? Is it just a kind of lost cause thing?
Yeah, it's one of those things where there are so many factors working against him, just in terms of his playing time and his skill level, right? Like, even if he were for sure going to get 500-plus plate appearances, could you really trust that he's going to be any good? And I think the answer is clearly no. So when you're looking at the Rays and you see Austin Meadows, he's going to be the guy who's in there. they are going to do a bunch of mix and matching with their outfield as well. This is what this team does. They're kind of like, they remind me a little bit of the A's, 10 years ago or whatever, where they're trying to eke out every little bit of value from their guys. They're going to platoon a bunch. And I think the proper thing to do is kind of consider your league format. You know, we're doing BARF, which is a daily moves league. And I think in that format, Rays outfielders will have a little more value because you can take them out when they're not playing, et cetera, et cetera. But I think in weekly leagues or even bi-weekly like the NFBC, it's going to be a really tough obstacle to negotiate because the counting stats overall for these guys are not going to be there because they're going to be sharing so much time. So I think depending on the format, that's how you're going to kind of push these guys up or down your draft board.
Yeah, I think the daily moves thing's a big point. And then I want one more opinion from you, Sammy, and then I'll get yours, Toby. With Margot leaving, I know we joked about it last night at the draft. Will Myers is a lot safer now, huh?
Yeah, well, this was a huge source of my tilt. You know, you thought Eno's tilt was funny. I was pissed, bro. Every time I went to make a pick, you know, Justin Mason's like, hey, you going to take Will Myers? Because I'm legit wearing a Will Myers jersey, right? And I keep giving him the nah wave. I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm actually good. And then after Will Myers gets taken, certainly his playing time opened back up. And I think it's really popular for people to say, look, I love the skills of Franchy Cordero. And I also love the skills of Franchy Cordero. But the thing you have to really look at with this guy is that he had 20 plate appearances last season. You know, he has played 79 career major league games. Like, this is not a guy who, dude, he's not stepping in and getting 500 plus plate appearances. I would be super, super dubious for that to happen. And meanwhile, Will Myers, even though he has certainly kind of taken a step down and not been that good, if he gets a full complement of plate appearances, this is a dude who can push for 20-20. I mean, if you look at his last 3 years, he's averaged more than 20-20 per like 150 games. So I think it is a huge win for Will Myers, even though he's not like a batting average guy. When you're looking at dudes who can contribute in both power and speed later in the draft, that's Will Myers to me. So if you've gotten him in any draft champions, et cetera, already, I think he's going to provide a lot of value where you got him.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped on that. I was writing up a preview on Rotoballer for his player profile the other day and saw platoon possibilities and got very, very angry. And now this makes me feel much, much better. Toby, what's your thoughts on like Will Myers and some of the maybe openings in San Diego?
Yeah, no, I think Sammy's right on. It was interesting to see Twitter's response, and there was such a big, like, pro Franchy group. And obviously, like, the skills are really, really exciting, the power speed combination. But you're talking about a guy, like Sammy alluded to, not a ton of experience in the majors, and he has a 39% strikeout rate in 273 plate appearances, right? So, the skills are great, like from a tools perspective, but he's never been able to really apply those consistently at all at the major league level. So I'm really excited about Will Myers. I had a bunch of Will Myers shares last year, which didn't work out so hot for me, but I totally agree. The guy can go 20-20 if given enough plate appearances. He really struggled towards the beginning of last year. His contact rate cratered, but in the second half, he was a lot better. The contact rate came up to career norms, and he has excellent plate discipline. I mean, last year, his O swing was 18%, which is super elite. So he's going to get on base, 56% hard hit rate. Or am I looking at the wrong guy? I'm probably looking at Franchy Cordero. I am. I hate myself. Forget
what I just said. You're like, this guy's good. Oh, no, wait, that's Franchy Cordero.
forget what I said. 28-29% O swing. So he gets on base, walks at a decent click, 10%. I'm just going to stop now, but he improved his contact rate second half. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see. Going about pick 280 right now. Looking forward to seeing where that climbs as things go on. But what we're all really here to talk about is what took place in San Francisco on Saturday. Saturday morning, afternoon, and evening took place during all those periods of the day. And it was the BARF draft. It was the third year for me, Sammy, fourth year overall, right?
Fifth year overall? Gosh, I think so. Yeah, fourth year.
So third year for me. Toby's second. This is where Toby and I met last year and started this wonderful thing we call a conversation to start Bubba and the Bat Flip. So let's get into the recaps. Toby, first off, what's your initial thoughts on your team? We'll get into certain snipings later, What's your thoughts on your team right now?
Well, before Toby even goes, can we talk about like the best line of the entire barf draft Toby introduced himself to Justin's wife?
Go for it, Sammy, because I was dying and I had to like point it out to you, and it was amazing.
Yeah, me and Bubba are like chatting like 5 feet away from Toby, who goes in, you know. Introduces himself to Justin Mason's wife, Danielle, and he comes up and shakes her hand. He's like, "Hey, I'm Toby." And she goes, "Oh, nice to meet you. I'm Danielle." And he kind of looks at her and there's a pause and he goes, you might know me as Batflip Crazy.
I was dying, dead.
It was very humorous. If people are listening and they don't think that's funny, it's one of those you had to be there things, but I thought it was great.
The struggle is real though. Like when I meet people in real life, like I did this at First Pitch Arizona, it's like, you know, people know like the Batflip Crazy handle, but not everybody knows my name is Toby. So it's like, I was like, do I cross off my name on my name tag at First Pitch Arizona and just write also known as Batflip Crazy? It's like, it sounds ludicrous and, but you know,
your brand is just so strong that your entire personality has actually been taken over. And I've heard you on your pods try to mention your God-given name a little bit more so that people actually know who you are. But it's just really strong branding by you. I gotta say,
I have a checklist to try to say Toby at least 10 times an episode. I'm just kidding. It was so good though. It was good point, Sammy. Because yeah, we were just chatting, and I'm like, did you just hear that? Because that was unbelievable. It reminded me, I told Toby, or Sammy, it reminded me of Animal House. Rush Chairman, damn glad to meet you. So it was pretty good, pretty good. But Toby, what's on your team?
Yeah, my team, I feel okay about my team. Heading into the draft, what I really noticed as I did my evaluations is, and I think this is one thing that's tough, like this is my only OBP draft that I do, my only quality starts draft that I do. And so normally I like to target starting pitching early, as folks know, but in quality starts leagues, at least according to the valuations that I run, which are not unique at all, as I'm sure Sammy will attest, because we pretty much have the same ones, running them through the auction calculator on Fangraphs. But starting pitchers are elevated even more. And so I knew that I wanted to target two aces starting off. And then what I was struggling with was stolen bases, just because it's so hard outside of the first few rounds to get any stolen bases with decent OBP. And so I kind of made a decision to kind of half-ass it a little bit on stolen bases and just kind of shoot for like kind of the glob of where a lot of people will end up towards the end of the season, like in the 90 to 110 range, according to like previous standing. So I punted stolen bases a little bit more than I would in a traditional draft, went heavy four category OBP runs, home runs, and RBI. Early with my hitters after Jacob deGrom and Shane Bieber. I feel okay about it, but I definitely made some mistakes throughout the draft, just in terms of, I don't know, like maybe drafting Will Smith, hoping that Mark Melanson was going to make it back to me and having Bubba draft him right afterwards. And then missing out on a couple really key targets, like when a guy named Sammy Reed took Kevin Biggio, who I really wanted, a couple picks before I was able to get him. But all in all, I feel fine about it. It's not I don't feel like it's a great team, but it's a workable team. I didn't lose during the draft, I think.
That's always good. That's always the most important part. Sammy, what'd you think about your squad?
So honestly, I'm not that big of a fan. And I think the big thing is that Toby and I tend to have, or Batflip Crazy, if you will, tend to have really similar approaches when we're building teams. You know, we drafted next to each other last year. I think we were number 5 and 6, possibly. And we both went double aces, or pocket aces, as Toby likes to say, in the first two rounds. And this season, I'm not necessarily going out of my way to go starting pitcher in the first two rounds, but I feel very uncomfortable not taking at least one in the first two rounds. And I kind of got to the spot, I had the number 9 pick, and that was probably a spot where I wanted to take Justin Verlander, and Verlander ended up going number 6. You know, it went Acuna, Trout, Yelich, and then Cole, DeGrom, and Verlander went, and then Bellinger, Betts. So at number 9, really the two guys on my short list were going to be Juan Soto and Max Scherzer. And so obviously because of brand, I had to take Juan Soto. you know, I probably would have been booed out of the room if I didn't, but also Max Scherzer, while he does have a really excellent evaluation when you look at his dollar value, you know, he's been great the last couple of years. There are some things that scare me about him, particularly back issues as things go forward. We've seen this with Clayton Kershaw, where Kershaw's back has cost him a lot of innings over the last couple of years. And when guys get into their mid-30s and they have back issues, that makes me a little wary of starting my team off with that player. And so I went with Soto. And then once you get to the second, it's like, okay, the guys that are there, the starters there, I don't really like any of them as much as the hitting there. Like, I still want to go best player available. And basically, long story short, is I ended up not taking a starter until the fourth round, which was Lucas Giolito, who I'm extremely high on. The projection systems don't like him, but I'm a huge fan. They will not like him because the last couple years, like 2 years ago, he was god-awful. And then last year, he made a big mechanical adjustment. His velocity came back. You know, he was the best pitching prospect in the game for a time. I think that he's fantastic. So I feel good about him. But I'll be honest, I'd feel a lot better about him as my number two and not my number one. So I never really feel like I got to where I needed to be with starting pitching. And that's a very uncomfortable spot for me.
I'm with you. Last year, I did not have good starting pitching, and it was very uncomfortable. But I actually wrote your team name down as one of the few that I really, really liked your draft. So it's interesting to hear how you didn't like
it. Oh, really?
Well, because I come from a background where I like to wait on pitching. So like I can see where you were going, and I don't mind it as much. And some of the pitchers you ended up going with, you know, Bumgarner, quality starts. Like I should have specified it's 5x5 OBP instead of average, quality starts instead of wins. So you'll see a few different drafting techniques involved here. But, you know, overall pitching, I guess you don't have really much of a bench when it comes to pitching. You're kind of short in that respect. But I don't mind what you did there at all by any means necessary. But your bats are strong, very, very strong. For my team, Garrett Cole with the fourth pick. That's unorthodox for me, of course, but I couldn't just pass on it. I took the fourth pick for a reason. I told Toby because he had the fifth pick. I said, don't worry about it, buddy. You're going to get either Cole or DeGrom. You're going to be very happy. So he was happy. He was kind of stressing for a minute there before the draft started, but he was good to go. And then I just went bats heavy. Somehow Nolan Arenado fell to me towards the end of the second round.
That must have felt really good. I'm going to be honest with you. I saw him fall that far, and I'm like, oh, man, like somebody's going to be so pumped about this.
Well, like I saw him, and I had him ready to go, and then you said, don't screw it up. Mason's like, Bubba, don't screw it up. Like it's such an – I literally walked back to my spot, started going back over all the names. Like who the hell – like did I miss someone here? And then I went and did it. I'm like, okay, thank God. And then I kind of stayed balanced. Like Starling Marte, Javi Baez, Whit Merrifield. It's a daily moves league, so position eligibility, LeMahieu, a lot of balancing acts like that. Got a couple of my main pitchers that I'm getting everywhere in Erod and Max Fried. And I just kept kind of filling in kind of team needs. I feel like I'm a little weak on power overall. Like I have a lot of good 20 to 30 home run guys, but they're also kind of risky guys at times. So I'm kind of nervous in that respect, and my bullpen sucks. I got this guy named Mark Melancon. He's the starting closer for the Braves.
So I got
him right now, which is pretty cool. Came off the board after Will Smith. Wild idea. I know.
It's but crazy going back to back like that. Who would have thought?
Great value.
So I got him going for me. But other than that, my bullpen, it's a little sketch. Ian Kennedy and Mark Melancon are my two closers. Don't feel the best about that, to be totally honest. But a lot of in-season moves coming my way there. But overall, I like my balance. I like my starting pitching a million times more than I did last year. And we'll wait and see if the happy fun ball's there, my team actually has upside. If it's not, might be really short on home runs. So we'll wait and see on that one. So, Toby, let's just get it off the table right now.
All right.
You took Will Smith in round 14. You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I want to elaborate on this. So a lot of closers went a little earlier, I think, than, you know, have been going in NFBC drafts because the format is slightly different. It's also 14 teams. And so I was looking at adding a third closer. I think I already had Jansen and Colum A. So I was doing decently, but I liked Mark Melancon a lot this year. And, you know, everybody like seems to be assuming that Will Smith is going to get the job because he's got a higher ADP in most drafts by about like, you know, 60, 70 spots. And so I was going in and it's a daily league. And so I thought, oh, it would be really nice to have both of them. It would be really nice to have Will Smith, solid ratios, solid Ks, like per inning. I can have him in there. you know, on a daily basis, maybe get some saves there. But I also want to have Melanson. And so I was thinking about the ADP gap, and I was like, well, if I go with Melanson here, somebody's definitely going to pick Will Smith because he goes higher in ADP, and, you know, he's a better pitcher, you know, pretty like everybody's established he's pretty much a better pitcher. And so I was like, so if I go Melanson here, I don't think I'm going to get Will Smith on the way back. But if I go Will Smith here, it's the 14th round in a 14-team draft. This would set like a new min pick record for Mark Melanson. Like, who in on God's great earth would choose Mark Melanson in the 14th round?
Blatant disrespect for your podcast partner.
To get him. So I went with Will Smith, hoping that Mark Melanson would come around on the other edge. And I don't know, Bubba, what happened after that?
Hey, kids, how this happened, Bubba.
Kids, there's a lesson. Don't succumb to ADP. It's very simple. Like I said, all I had was Ian Kennedy up to this point. And Toby made a really good point there for a second, is there was a closer run I haven't seen in any draft yet. It was bananas. Like, almost every main closer was already gone. So I'm sitting there going, you know, as the round goes on, all of a sudden Joe Jimenez goes. I'm sitting there going, okay, please, yeah. Melanson, fall to me. Please, Melanson, fall to me. And Toby walks up there, and I can't see who he picked. I saw it was a gray square. And I'm sitting there going, oh, crap. Because I know through the podcast, through talking in general, Toby loves Melanson. Toby has a – how many teams do you have Melanson on, Toby, besides Barf, because you don't?
Melanson, I have him on 6 of my 9 teams so far.
Okay, that's what I thought. Do you have Will Smith on any of those teams?
I have 0 Will Smith. Actually, I have one Will Smith share.
You're diversifying the profile. That's smart. That's very smart. Diversifying the profile. But I knew how much he liked him, so I'm like, okay, he just took Melanson. I'm screwed. Here we go. Great. And then he walks away, and I see Will Smith, and I'm like, oh my God. This is going to be great. Like, it's going to be amazing.
Oh, God.
I knew when the draft started, for one, drafting next to each other was going to be a bad idea, because we know each other too well. But yeah, the Melanson falling to me, I could not do it. If it was rude, I apologize to any listeners out there, but I needed it, and I still don't like my closers. So
it was a totally sharp move on your end, and I just felt like such a joker. Like, we're in the 14th round, and I'm going to, like, double-tap closers on the same team. Like, who in their right mind does that, right? And what's funny is you just mentioned the gray sheet. So, like, it's a real draft board, and we take the sheets, and the sheets are color-coordinated by position. And I remember when you got up there, I saw you were going for a gray sheet. And you know when Joe Jimenez has already gone that you're, like, really in the dregs of the closers. And I was like,
easy, bud. This can only be one thing.
No, I didn't
have any shade around here.
Well, Jose Leclerc, Keon Akella all went already. It was wild. But I took them. I needed them. I felt bad for a few seconds, but then I know you're a smarter person than I am. But it was a little tricky there at that point in time. But it got better, because actually that was not even the first one that got you. Sammy, you got him on one in like round 8, because there's one thing Toby did is, I remember those that listen to the Second Base podcast, I think we mentioned many times second base is shallow. Many times. Toby, what round did you get your first second baseman in?
Round 26, Jurickson Profar. Easily the worst player on my team, I think.
Hey, Sammy, in round 8, who did you draft that? I know for a fact Toby was talking to me going, I really want this guy, and then you grabbed him.
That would be one Cavan Biggio, and it's actually my first Cavan Biggio share. And let me tell you, there certainly is a hit of dopamine that hits you when you select somebody, and then you hear somebody curse behind you or groan or throw something. You just know that not only have you made a pick that somebody else wanted and you feel good about that, but that you made somebody else, a good friend like Toby, really sad. And, you know, let me tell you, my cold, dead heart really started beating fast when that happened. It felt good.
It was Toby once in a while, but Eno was the one that was getting pissy a lot. Like, he was getting sniped left and right. He was pacing back and forth from his computer to the draft board. Like, I thought he was on a mission. It was amazing watching Eno draft. But now, this is a serious question. This isn't making fun of anybody. when the second baseman started disappearing the way they did Toby, like we were chatting at our little table, and you kind of had a strategy, and all of a sudden another guy would go, and, oh, okay, this guy would go. Like, you know, we talked about it, like I did it with Melanson there. I took Nico Goodrum at one point.
You took Nico Goodrum super early.
But what I'm getting at there is we talked about with NFBC, when you're in these sharp rooms, you get to a point, you just go get your guy. And that's all I started doing. Like, I want this guy to – like, Nico Goodrum in a daily moves league, he fits, like, four positions. Like, bring him on. I'm in.
You know, but can I kind of do a little interlude here? Because I think you're touching on a really great point. We saw this in Barf, and we will see it – my cat's making a bunch of noise. Excuse me.
It's not my dogs for once, so I'm happy.
Stupid-ass cat. You know, we see this in live drafts a lot that – the energy of the room and the fact that you're not on a draft client, you know, when you're doing like NFBC drafts or Yahoo drafts or whatever, you're drafting in an online client and the players are listed right in the software, and people tend to kind of go off that. You know what I mean? They'll like look at the top like 20 players and say, I like this guy and I like this guy, even though I like this other guy a lot, while he's way down the list so I can wait on him. And when you're in a live setting, people aren't paying attention to that. They have their own rankings and their own lists. And when guys are near the top, they take them. So I think that ADP is generally thrown out the window in a large way. People are generally aware, but in a lot of places, it just doesn't have the same weight that it does in online drafts. And like I said, we saw this in Barf this weekend. We see it in the main event all the time where people just get their guys. And at some point, you really have to do that. And I think the best managers have a real special way of feeling the energy of the draft and really having a sensitivity of balance between their own rankings and ADP and finding out where those things come together.
Yeah, it's a conversation I had with Modica on Twitter, like on the way to Barf, as he was tweeting about it. So I jumped in. We preach it a lot on the show, is know the player pool. Like, you don't have to know everything about everything, but just know the player pool. Have an idea of when, like a vague area when people go, and then go get your guys. Like, if you know, and one thing where we were drafting, at least, you know, at the fourth pick, you're kind of on a turn almost. I was watching guys disappear like 10 picks before I thought they were going to go. It was craziness. So pure craziness. But Toby, I'm just curious, because you're super sharp. What was, when you started having second basemen disappear, like I said, we were talking about at our little table, you wanted this guy, and then he'd go, and this guy, and he'd go. And so you just kept punting it. Like, you didn't force your hand is what I'm trying to get at here. Yeah. What strategy did you use there? Because I'm a big fan of not forcing your hand, like in other positions. You didn't do it at a position you already knew was very shallow.
Yeah, you know, heading into the draft, I felt like I was pretty sharp, and I feel pretty dull after this draft. I feel worn down.
Toby, you're pretty sharp. Tell me what the hell happened during this draft.
He got frazzled.
Well, you know, we get this question a lot, actually. I think, like, every time we do a position preview, we get this question about, like, who's the last, you know, third baseman, or who's the last second baseman that you want to get?
I'm pretty sure Jurickson Profar was not on that list.
Yeah, Jurickson Profar definitely was not on that list. But I mean, like, generally speaking, it's like, you know, it doesn't really matter as long as your other positions are good. You know, like, I'd rather have a good player at another position than try to fill my second base slot just because it's empty, right? Right. And so I ended up with Jurickson Profar, you know, and I think Sammy makes a really great point. And I think one of the things that I even mentioned early on in the draft is it's so hard because we've all been drafting using average, and now we're in an OBP draft. And so it really just shifts the dynamic, like, horribly, right? Josh Donaldson was my first hitter at pick 33, right? And so obviously, like, hitters are going at different spots, and it's just really hard to tell, you know, when the right time to grab somebody was, because, you know, I have like a bunch of second basemen. Like, Jurickson Profar is like I have him as like a $4 player, which is actually higher than Nico Goodrum. So maybe I'm not as sad, but I really needed I needed stolen bases. And so that's the only reason why I went with Profar there, because he provided at least a little bit. But second base was super shallow. And no, I mean, Goodrum's a great pick because it's a daily league and he has all that position eligibility. And I was just trying to get a little bit too cute, but it was literally like, I really wanted Gavin Lux, and I was going to get Gavin Lux at, like, I think like about a one round ahead of where he usually goes. And then Matt, Matthew Indeed. Wood, you know, who also plays the main event, super sharp player, also Dodgers fan. He snags him. And then I was going to get Ryan McMahon right after that. And he went like right after Lux. And then I think, Sammy, you grabbed Rougned Odor right before I was going to get him. And then Dalton Del Don grabbed like Cesar Hernandez, like, you know, right when I was going to get him. So it was just like, a
dude, you guys have 4 second baseman. What you doing? Why are you snaking my dude?
Exactly, dude. Who needs it? There's a shortstop so deep. Why are you getting a middle infielder that's a second baseman? But
but
it's just like, but again, like, you know, I'm sad about that. But the good thing is like, I now know that I have this glaring weakness in Jurickson and Profar. And just so you know, I did look at the major league schedule and the Padres play the Rockies to begin with. And so I feel okay about that first week. But, you know, I know I have a weakness. It's the weakest spot on my, like, starting lineup. And so hopefully I can grind it into something, you know, or someone who is decent. I even did things like trying to get Gene Segura, who's only a shortstop, knowing that he's going to get second base eligibility in a little bit, and he went. So I don't know. Sometimes you just, like, give up and try to take the best player.
Hey, Sammy. When you're looking at your team, and we kind of talked about your overall thoughts on it, were there any picks you kind of just regretted, like, after the fact, going, why did I take this guy?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't think there were actually any picks where I regretted taking a player. I think there were picks where I regretted not taking somebody else. You know what I mean?
Good way to phrase it. No, that's true. Good way to phrase
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no players do I look at my team and I'm like, oh, that sucks. Like, I don't like this guy. But, you know, there's always two things going on during your draft. You're trying to take good players and you're also trying to construct a really good, well-balanced team. And, you know, like, I think what Toby was talking about is you don't just want to draft for need, right?
Yes.
Like, if you sit there and draft for need, like, you see NFL teams do this all the time. They forego just better overall players for, like, a player that they need. Oh, this team lost a safety this year. This guy makes a lot of sense. That's BS, bro. You need to be taking good players. And so, like, when I wasn't taking pitchers early, it's because I had hitters ranked above the pitchers. You know, and at some point, you need to understand that once you get enough talent on your team, you need to start drafting for need, at least at some point. You need to kind of take the worst of it in expected value to fill a spot. And so I think this kind of relates to what Toby was saying at second base. He wasn't willing to, like, just take a guy he thought wasn't that good over a guy he thought was just because he needed that position. But again, it's a real feel thing, kind of figuring out at what point do you bite the expected value bullet and take a guy that fills a need. And you know, I really think that figuring that out in draft is the hallmark of a good drafter. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're at the Barf League, dude. We're in a bar. We're eating pizza. We're taking shots of tequila. You know, I can't say that we're all at our very sharpest during the draft. Like, let's be honest, right? Like, I'm running outside every 10 minutes to, like, smoke a cigarette with, you know, bum a cigarette off somebody. I'm like, oh, I've got a bunch of tequila. Let's have cigarettes. And somebody runs out. Hey, it's your turn. And I'm like, oh, snap. Like, you know, the whole thing was a disaster and it's great. But certainly, like, roster construction wise, you know, I ended up taking a bunch of hitters early. And I think there were a couple spots where, especially after, like, the first five rounds, where I could have foregone a certain player. Like, I took Joey Gallo in the fifth, for example. Mm-hmm. I love Joey Gallo. I'm a huge Joey Gallo stan, especially in an on-base percentage league where his downside in the ratio category is just so, so limited because he walks a lot. I love this player, right? But I only had one starter up to that point, and I easily could have taken a Zach Greinke or a Severino or a Berríos, a guy like that, instead of Gallo. But I just thought Gallo was the best player. And, like, the way things shook out, possibly I think I might have been better served by taking a second starting pitcher at that point.
Yeah, that's you phrase that really well, because I like to think we're all sharp enough where we're not going to go draft guys that we don't like to begin with. We're not forcing picks, like Toby was saying at second base. That's why I wanted to ask the question to explain that to people. So that's more the thing is, you know, looking back on it, you know, should I have taken this guy instead of this guy? Stuff along those lines. My biggest one, and I'm a big Salvy Perez fan, but it's OBP, and you know, Sammy's such a good friend. I get back to the table, I'm like, dude, I should have taken someone else. His OBP's horrible. And Sammy's like, They're catchers, man. All the real BPs suck. I was like, thank you, Sammy. That's why we're friends. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. But, please point out the catcher as the good on-base percentage.
Yes, he made me feel so better so quick. But, like, because Carson Kelly went right after him, and then Omar Narvaez, the next two guys I wanted, but the next two catchers off the board. So I took my guy. But other than that, I can kind of justify and feel good about everything else I did for the most part for now. So I'm pretty happy on that front. Toby, was there anything that stood out to you outside of the Will Smith thing that stood out to you in your draft?
Well, you took away my joke by saying outside of the Will Smith thing, because I was going to stay 14th round. I definitely would have done that a lot different. Gone with maybe Mark Melancon or something like that. Not really. I mean, there's definitely, like, you know, there's times in drafts. I feel like where, you know, with the – there was just certain times, like, because of the way the draft worked, right? It's the only OBP draft. You've got your valuations there. Like, to be honest with you, I spent like the night before studying them or whatnot, where you kind of like get this glimmer in your head of like what's possible. And that's what I felt like when I wanted to get Kevin Biggio. It's like, I have this need at second base. Second base in OBP leagues is super shallow. Like, I didn't have a guy worth more than $18 at second base the whole draft. And there was only like maybe, you know, 10 guys who were $10 or more in terms of the valuations. And so I had this like glimmer of hope around Kevin Biggio, just like, oh my God, this could be like the perfect thing. I need speed. I need second base. Kevin Biggio, get to me. So like that would be the only one where I think I took Carlos Santana, and I don't think I really had Biggio on my radar until after I took Santana. And I think that's the one where I feel like I made a little bit of a mistake, only because there was a couple more rounds of like power heavy OBP solid first baseman. Like Edwin Encarnacion was kind of the last one to go in round 10. Yep. And so I feel like if I was a little sharper, I could have gotten Biggio earlier instead of Santana and maybe still gotten Biggio coming around. But, you know, like if that's the worst thing, then oh well. And then, God, I know you said don't talk about it, but the Will Smith thing is just like, I told you before the show started, that's
gonna be
like
trying the to one be nice. Pick.
That's the one pick I'm going to remember throughout the whole draft season, and maybe like a good pick just to remind me, like, don't get cute, man. Don't get cute. Like Sammy was saying, get your guys, pick your players. Don't try to get too cute. If you see value, if you like a guy more, draft him, you know?
Yeah, well, let me throw one thing out there that may or may not make you feel better. There will always you'll walk out of every draft saying, "God, I made a mistake here." Like, if somebody walks out with a perfect draft, let me know about it. It'll be the first time in history. And I've had this happen a number of times where I just left the draft so tilted about this one thing, this one player that I took instead of another player that I really wanted, and then I didn't get the other guy. And so many times it ends up working out just fine. Like, there's a legitimate chance that Will Smith ends up getting the job, the closing job, and we don't even think about this again. And Toby's like, "Oh yeah, I got a closer." You know, we're sitting here, we turned on February 8th. Like, we don't know squat. And, you know, even though it's kind of tilting, I think that it has actually a decent possibility of working out just fine. So
yeah, I completely agree. I think Will Smith's the better reliever. I would not be shocked if Will Smith has more saves, maybe twice as more saves by season's end. I really wouldn't kick yourself too much on that one. We talked about OBP being different, quality starts being different. You guys that make your spreadsheets were having, you guys were all talking about how you couldn't find like the right, I guess, site to pull from or whatever terminology you guys use on computers. And then I'm sitting there looking at Sammy's sheet. I'm like, "Oh, that's pretty slick, man." He's like, "Oh, it's pretty simple." Well, that's pretty slick, man. How, Sammy, we'll start with you on this one. How do you go into, like, for the listeners that don't play in OBP, and I think OBP is kind of the wave of the future, and we talked about it at the draft that NFBC probably won't go there anytime soon because they're kind of old school and stuck in their ways, but we're seeing more and more. I think Tout went to OBP on most of theirs, and we're seeing some of the other kind of long-lasting leagues go that direction. OBP-wise, how do you kind of prepare yourself for that since it is different than what we're all used to?
Yeah, I think number one is – it's a really good point that OBP is kind of becoming more popular in our fantasy space. And I think the reason is because, frankly, it's a superior stat, right? It encompasses a player's real life value a lot better than batting average does. And it's less variant, meaning that, you know, on a year to year basis, there's not as much variance in on base percentage. It's a more predictable and stable stat than batting averages. And so I think for those two reasons, it encompasses skill better and it encompasses skill of the fantasy player better because it's more predictable. I think it's a great way to play. I think you're absolutely right that leagues like NFBC that are kind of like old school and will keep the classic 5x5 format together, that's all well and good. But in terms of preparing for on base percentage, I think that Matt Modica quote is really apt. It's know the player pool, right? If you're so used to judging guys by their batting average, that's all great. But I think one of the big things is understanding like who walks and who doesn't. And those guys who walk, it can really make or break value. I mean, we talked about, you know, Joey Gallo's a shining example. His batting average floor, he could easily hit 200. But the guy, you know, walks a ton. And so his on-base percentage is going to be really stable at 340, probably at the lower end or higher. He could easily be a 350 or 360 guy. On the flip side, there's going to be other dudes who we like because they tend to have high batting averages, but they don't walk a lot. And so there's a lot of kind of variance in their, a wide range in their outcomes. Think of Adalberto Mondesi, right? And I think our draft valued him very well. I mean, he's going in the early third in a lot of batting average drafts because he is supposed to hit 270 or 260, somewhere in there, which is fine. But in this draft, he went in the early sixth round. Mm-hmm. Because his on-base percentage has a great chance of being under 300. Mm-hmm. So I think really knowing this stuff and understanding it, and then, you know, having projection systems, obviously, that'll do a lot of the heavy lifting for you, will help out. And then what we talked about, like, all bets are off. Like, ADP will get shattered in these kinds of drafts. You know, we saw Toby's draft. I mean, Toby took a lot of guys way above ADP because they are much better in on base percentage formats. Carlos Santana and Rhys Hoskins, I think, are two shining examples of that.
Definitely. Like, we can keep going farther. Toby took Josh Donaldson in the third round, which is way higher than normal. Toby, how did you go about kind of evaluating your OBP type targets for the draft? How did you prepare? Like, what cheat sheet? How did you put it in your formula?
Yeah, so it was pretty simple. I just used Sammy mentioned, it's really hard to find data on OBP leagues that's broader than just a single league, right? And it's also difficult to find quality starts data. Like, all of the Fangraphs, you know, public projection sites don't do quality starts, right? And so what I've done the last couple of years is just go to the auction calculator. You know, it allows you to on Fangraphs and allows you to put in like the number of teams, you know, the batter hitter split, which I normally set around 60, 63, 64, depending on the league. And then, you know, I just calculate it and then I upload those like into Excel and I add filters to them, and it allows me to filter them by, you know, the valuation and then by position and then also a little bit by stats. And I really like, I trust those valuations because they make sense intuitively to me. But I think the challenge was, which Sam alluded to, is like, you've got these huge discrepancies between what, like, I think in most people's mind a guy is worth versus, you know, what the projections are going to say in an OBP league. And Donaldson's a clear example of that. And so, yeah, I ended up targeting a bunch of guys that are just really heavy OBP guys, like Josh Donaldson was one, Rhys Hoskins, understanding that like Gary Sanchez in some respects is more valuable than Real Muto in a single league because it's OBP and he has a higher walk rate than Real Muto. The power is going to be greater than Real Muto likely is, and the stolen bases aren't as necessary in a standalone league as they are in like, say, an overall, where you really need to be balanced across the board. So I think that was the key thing. And then also quality starts, like the quality starts is key because there's a huge drop off. You know, there was like what, 14 guys who had 20 or more quality starts. And then it just drops off pretty precipitously after that. And there's just a huge difference, like right between DeGrom And like, there's a 10 quality start difference between DeGrom and the 33rd, you know, ranked guy in quality start. So there's just a big separation there. So just kind of thinking about those things ahead of time and not being worried about jumping ADP unless it's a second baseman. Because if it's a second baseman, you got to just wait and wait and wait. But generally, like that's how I do it. And I think that would be helpful for other people who are out there who have kind of different leagues, both size-wise and with the stats, is just to kind of run that auction calculator. Don't go exclusively by it, like by the valuations. Like, don't be super rigid about it, but just see kind of if guys are in the general ballpark of each other before you draft.
And the big thing with OBP, like you guys both are saying, and it's the word that Eno loves to use, I think Doug and I were talking about it during the draft, Doug Thorburn, is it's super sticky. Like you're saying, Sammy, it's much more, you can kind of plan for more. Guys that walk. It's not like you just all of a sudden hit 350 because your BABIP went to 381 season. It's right. Guys that have good plate discipline have good plate discipline. Can you get better plate discipline? Yes. Do you usually lose good plate discipline? Not very rapidly. So it's something you can kind of count on a little more. Makes it really, really interesting overall. So I like the OBP. This is the might only be this. I don't think Barf's always been OBP. I think this is the second year of OBP for Barf. So it'll be fun to see how it keeps expanding on all of this. Let's just have some fun real quick. We'll just take a quick hot lap through our thoughts on other teams that we kind of stood out to us. For those that don't know, obviously, because you didn't see it on Twitter, I didn't mention it because I'm a bad host. We have 14 teams in this league. Crazy Mike drafted first. Eno drafted second. Eno Saris of The Athletic. Thug Life, Doug Thorburn, drafted third. I drafted fourth. Toby drafted fifth. Kang Doe drafted sixth. The defending champion, Joe G, who I thought had a very sneaky good draft, drafted seventh. Matty Wood, talking about him, he drafted eighth, new to the league. Sammy drafted ninth. Our boy Giants Homer drafted 10th. We had Howard Bender, team name Gravy Boat, drafted 11th. Mason drafted 12th. Who the heck? Oh, Zach, Matt's friend, very, very good NFPC player, drafted 9th.
Sharp kid.
Very sharp. Sharp and way too polite for our room. Way too polite. And Dalton Del Don from Yahoo Sports drafted 14th. So just kind of going around in a circle here, Sammy, what's a team that stood out to you of having a pretty sharp draft?
So there were several that I liked, and you mentioned Joe, who's the defending champ. Got the better of me at the end of last season. Yeah, quietly sitting there, sniping good picks. He had a great team. The guy that I will throw out is Matt Davis, at Matty Wood on Twitter. Him and Zach are really good friends. They team up in NFBCs. They do a lot of high-dollar auction leagues. They're both just real sharp kids, and I think they're kind of like the next wave of young, smart NFBC players, you know, adding guys like Vlad Sedler to that who are going to kind of take over NFBC in the next couple years. And he just had a really strong draft. I thought that he took some shots where he believed in guys. He sniped me several times, and I'll talk about some of his picks. He picked right before me at number 8, and he went Betts, Judge, Xander Bogaerts, and then he went Kershaw, Yu Darvish. He got Bo Bichette. So he snaked me multiple times. The three players he snaked me on right before I was going to pick, the pick before, he snaked me on Trevor Bauer in the 7th. So I ended up getting Zach Wheeler as my number 2. I would have liked Trevor Bauer quite a bit more. He later on got Justin Turner, David Dahl, Gavin Lux, Alex Verdugo, Kyle Hendricks, who I think are all really solid, Brandon Nimmo, and then the two other picks he sniped me on, Herman Marquez in the 17th, right before I was going to take him, because it's a daily moves league, so you can take him out for those Coors starts if you want to. And I just really liked Marquez there. I think if you manage him well, he can be a really, really excellent pitcher. And in the 17th, I just thought that was amazing value. And I knew for a fact he was going to snipe me because he asks, hey, this is a daily moves league, right? And people are like, yeah. And then I see him walk up and he goes to the black stickers, which are the starting pitchers. And he picks the list up and I'm like, oh, dude. He's taking Marquez. And I told you, Bubba, I'm like, dude, mm-hmm. He's taking Marquez. He's going to snake me right now. And he did. So that put me on some tilt. And then the next go around, I was all set to take Daniel Murphy in the 19th, who's one of my favorite bounce back candidates. And he staked me for him as well. So I think overall, you know, he got some guys later like Nimmo and Dustin May, Cole Hamels. Yeah, Corey Dickerson. I mean, he just really had a solid draft all up and down, and he took some well-calculated shots with guys like Verdugo and David Dahl and Gavin Lux, who I think, you know, are riskier type of players, but I think they all have huge upside. And in the spots he got them, I was really impressed, and he kind of came out and showed why he's kind of one of the better up-and-coming fantasy players out there. So big ups to Matty.
Yeah, I kept giving Matty Trump a hard time because it seemed like every time he went up there, it was a Dodger player or a former Dodger player or an MLS player. So I'm like, thank God it's not a head-to-head league because I'd be lucky enough to face him when the Dodgers have four in Coors and just get absolutely smoked when I face Matt. But you look at his roster, and it's a thing that I don't pay enough attention to while I'm drafting, but I think he does – because I think he's that smart at what he's doing. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he just fell this way. All but one of his pitchers in the National League. That's a big plus. You know, it's not a must for anybody, but those things add up after a while. And then just where he's got so many NL West guys that they're going to get half their road games and Coors against Colorado. Like, that's just bananas. Absolutely really crazy stuff there. So, yeah, good call on that, on how that played out. Toby, what's one of the teams that stood out to you when you're looking at it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be like a total homer on the podcast, but I really liked both of your guys' offenses. Aww, a
thanks.
Lot. I just love you guys. But no,
we like your pitching, so maybe we can work on that.
I was about to say, Sammy, did you notice he didn't say our teams?
Cool. No wonder you like my hitting because I didn't take a damn pitch.
Your hitting is awesome. Your pitching is garbage. If you don't have the two aces, I'm just like, come on.
I mean, I like your team and all, but you're not going to win. So.
No, but like, I feel like the toughest thing for these drafts is focusing on OBP. And then I think when you look at what you guys did offensively, like Sammy in particular, yours, I like look at your roster and like Alonso at first base, you know, Kevin Biggio at second, Jose Ramirez at third, Machado at short, Odor at middle infielder. Obviously, his OBP is not great, but like where you got him is excellent. But like
I had to spend some of my on base equity to get a little power speed down there.
Totally, but I think that is like that's one of the things that going into the draft I tried to do was similar to batting average, right? Is build a cushion because you know later on you're just chipping away at it, you know? Right. And so if you can chip away with a guy who's going to get you like, you know, probably like close to 30 home runs, over 10 stolen bases, I mean, that's really nice. So I really like what you were able to do there. And then similarly, Bubba, like I felt like you got a really nice balance of players, like your outfield in particular, like Starling Marte, Laureano, Chu, and Kanya. Like they're all kind of, at least the bottom three, like Chu, Laureano, Marte, are all like guys who contribute in every single category and don't necessarily hurt you anywhere. Like Marte and Laureano aren't OBP studs, but they're, you know, in it's so hard to find stolen bases with OBP in this league that if you can do it without really hurting yourself, I think that's a really, really strong thing to do. I would agree with Matthew Wood's team. I think that his pitching, you mentioned Sammy, like the depth of it. I feel like there isn't a ton of weakness, like Bauer for whatever he may or may not do, like quality starts, he's better than wins probably. And then the volume, of strikeouts should be decent. You know, Darvish, Hamels, Hendricks, the Hendricks pick was another one where I like realized he hadn't been drafted yet. I think that was pick 173, that he drafted him at. Like he was a guy that I wanted. Kershaw, just really solid from like a ratio perspective,
right? And he didn't take a hitter, a pitcher, until round four, right?
Yeah, he planned it really well.
Yeah, the same as me, but I thought he pulled off catching up on pitching better than I did. You know, he really had a good plan and ended up with a really good staff despite starting off Betts, Judge, and Xander. So I just thought he was really sharp in that regard.
Definitely, yeah. And so It was, I mean, it was a blast of a draft, but it's a sharp room. And so I don't think anybody left with like, there was no team that just kind of blew me away as being head and shoulders above, the others. And so I think, you know, it should be a really fun season, I think. Bubba, what about you though? Whose drafts did you like the most?
I think I'm going to, one of the ones I mentioned, I like Sammy's at the get go. Because you pretty much drafted a team like I normally would, because I usually don't take pitching early. So you go bats and you kind of piece it together. So I like what you did there for sure. But like I mentioned it a second ago, Joe had a quietly like just low like Bellinger, Bregman. Then he comes back with Snell in the third round, which I thought was great for the way pitching was going to still get Snell there was pretty nice. And then he got Meadows, who I knew you were wanting, Toby, and then VR and Woodruff. Just goes down the list. I think his seventh round pick of Shohei Ohtani was sneaky good. Because it's a daily moves league. After three starts as pitcher, he becomes a starting pitcher and a designated hitter. So he can move him in and out on fan tracks like that. So that's a sneaky nice move in the seventh round. And then so on and so forth. I wanted Nick Castellanos so bad. And he got him in the ninth round. And I thought that was very good value. I really like what he did with his team. Like you guys said, there's really no bad teams out the draft. And then one thing I would suggest people that they want to see the whole draft board, it was tweeted out a couple different places. I know Howard Bender wrote an article on it. Watch what Dalton Del Don did on the turn in a 14-team league. You just look at his roster. He went and got his guys. He didn't like adhere to ADP, but he just loaded up on like top-end pitching or good LBP guys. Like he went Chris Bryant and Vlad Guerrero on back-to-back rounds at one point. His team is sneaky good. It's like not super flashy at times, but he just added guys that really – built the team together, and it's not always easy when this draft, like we talked about many times, was really crazy on the runs, like really crazy. So the way he was able to sit back and watch everything take place from all those picks on the turn, I thought was sneaky good. And
I agree with that. Every time I looked at one of D3's swings, I was like, man, he just took two good players. Every single time I'm like, man, I like those picks. And it's his first year in this league, I think.
Yes, it's his first year. Yep.
Yeah, he did football, but he didn't do baseball last year. So his first in the baseball league. And, you know, I've been a big fan of his for quite a while. You know, he's been a OG Yahoo guy for several years, been a big fan of his content. It was super cool to meet him in real life. And, you know, like, you never know, like some fantasy analysts are actually not very good fantasy players. And he came in and I thought he did a really, really good job. Very impressed by him.
Yeah, he was just quiet in the corner doing his thing, but he wasn't like avoiding people. You can go talk to him the whole time. He was like focused because he told me when I was over there talking to him at one point, he's like, yep, first draft of the year, trying to figure it out. Because I don't do a lot of OBP leagues, and it's kind of how we all were. We're all sitting there kind of like, you know, asking each other, kind of poking at each other just to get a little info. Like, how are you going about this? How are you going about it? And he's just kind of sitting there doing it. And he was funny because we'd be sitting there in between picks kind of, you know, BSing and having fun. You were talking about you go take shots and have a smoke or everything going on. Dalton literally had, like, his computer, his phone, spreadsheets on the table. He was focused. He was locked in, and it showed. It showed in a big way. But before we call this one a night, Toby, final thoughts on the Barf draft. What's your overall thoughts on what took place in the city?
Well, I mean, it's just, like, it's awesome to be a part of the draft. I mean, the second time, this is only my second ever live draft. I'm going to be doing some live drafts in Las Vegas, which will be a lot of fun, but it's just a great time to get together with folks. Like there's a lot of great people in the industry in the Bay Area. So if anybody else wants to move to the Bay Area, who's part of the industry, I definitely highly recommend it. But just a thank you to Justin in particular for just pulling it together. He invited me last year, like on a whim because I was moving locally, and just a really, really awesome time, a chance to see you guys. Believe it or not, Bubba and I have only seen each other twice in real life. And so it was nice to see you, Bubba. And then Sammy, the three of us were kind of chilling at one table, having a good time. It was just awesome. And so it should be a really fun season. It's so interesting because it's OBP, it's quality starts, and it's also daily. And so like you can really work the grind. Like last year, when I look at, you know, the number of games played by each team, I think you can kind of see who's kind of grinding it out a little bit. And so that's always an interesting element to it too, is like another layer of strategy on there from just a daily leagues or daily changes perspective. So a ton of fun, really had a great time. Thank you to Justin for helping put that together. It was awesome.
For sure. Sammy, final thoughts on the Barf draft.
Yeah, I echo those sentiments for Justin Mason, also for Todd Alsman, who's the owner and proprietor of the Rec Room. And he is a part of, he didn't do the baseball this year because he had some things to do with his kids, but he's normally a part of Barf. And the Rec Room is a super awesome bar. If you're like ever in the city, you should go. Like, frequent that place. It's really great. And I think, like, just from a draft perspective, I think the first live draft of the year is always a really good thing to get under your belt. You know, if the first live draft you're doing of the year is you're doing, you know, a $1,700 main event or a $2,500 auction, you know, it's good to get your feet wet a little bit and understand that live drafts are a little more chaotic and understand the things you need to do to kind of keep your wits about you and know what's going on with the player pool and where your team's at and where other teams are at. It's much easier to lose yourself in those ways than it is when you're just doing online or even, you know, like a slow draft, like we're doing a lot of right now. The dynamic is a lot different. So I think getting your feet wet in that regard is really huge. And Barf is just a lot of fun. You know, I've done this for, you know, my fourth year and people are like, dude, what the hell is Barf? It's the Bay Area Rotisserie Fantasy League. Justin Mason just had to make like an inappropriate acronym, which is very on brand for him. But it's a great league and there is a lot of sharp people in this room and adding Matt and Zach to it, Dalton Del Don. I mean, there is, you know, you guys like Doug Thorburn, dude, I've competed against Doug for years and years in our home leagues and he's a big winner, dude. He is really sharp. And so there are so many sharps, you know, Joji, I mean, everybody. And it's a really tough competitive league and I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's real fun because I think out of the 14 guys, I want to say 9 or 10 of us do this kind of analyze and do podcasts or writing or something along the way. And there's like 3 or 4, you know, you said the term pros versus Joes, but they're not because they're sharp as hell. And it's really funny. Mason and I, when we were setting it up yesterday, we looked at the trophy and Todd was there. And it like 4 years of baseball, it's been 2 analysts and 2 of the Joes.
Right.
So it just shows you how like sharp the room is overall and tells you not just because people don't write or podcast doesn't mean they're not sharp to begin with. And it's a ton of fun in that room. A lot of fun. I love it every year. I said it many times on the show. Watching Eno draft is one of my favorite things to do. It is so fun.
Amazing.
Because you kept poking at him like, oh, it's not like you have a podcast or, you know, or an article that I read like 3 times on the way here. Like, who knows what you like, Eno? And he's just, oh, it's awesome. Absolutely amazing.
Eno is the best, and he's so much fun. And the thing I love about Eno is, A, he's very sharp. Like, he knows his stuff. And B, he's, like, one of the most popular analysts out there. He's followed by 1 million people on Twitter. And he's, like, the most down-to-earth, like, cool dude. Like, he's just as cool in real life as you would think he is.
Yeah, the first time I met Eno, I was at a Starbucks in Paso Robles waiting for my wife. And he tweeted a picture at the Firestone Brewery, which is across the freeway from where I was. And I just sent him a message and said, mind if I come by? I sat and had like 4 beers with him and told my wife I was going to be late. So like that's just how Eno rolls. But we could talk forever, but we'll wrap it up there. Barf was awesome. Drafting the books, like Toby said, now the grind really begins because what trades are going to happen still? Jock Jam's deal is off the table. So that's going to be fun to see what happens there. But make sure you guys check out Sammy on Twitter at SammyReedFI, Toby at BatFlipCrazy. I'm at BDentric. Thanks for joining us on this one. We'll catch you guys later.
Oh, O'Reilly. It's super. Start Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Get up to a $25 gift card after rebate with the purchase of select Superstart batteries. Our professional parts people will test your old battery for free and recommend the right battery for your vehicle. For power, performance, and reliability, choose Superstart batteries only at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.